Happy Friday. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Okolo Village Studio. Bill and Darlene are enjoying a great vacation over on the West Coast, and he's taking us along as he shares some great photos on his Facebook page. I've seen seals and sunsets and a whole lot more. Head on over there and check him out. It is Friday, August 7th. 2026. I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News, Sawarita Sun, and Nogales International. Brendan Kraft is with me, producing and engineering the show. We have two interviews and some weekend planning coming at you in the next hour. First, we're going to be talking to Sarita Mayor Tom Murphy. A lot going on down there where I live. And Tom is also the head of the RTA board, because apparently he doesn't have enough to do. And if you're new in town, that's the Regional Transportation Authority. Later, we're going to welcome Dr. Manny Valenzuela. He's the superintendent of the Sawarita Unified School District, and they welcomed back more than 6,000 students this week. Lots going on there, too. If you have a question or comment anytime during the show, call us at 520-790-2040. That's the Buckmaster Show live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate, and Property Management. Tom Murphy, welcome.
Well, thank you. I think it's appropriate to call it a great Sawarita day with Dr. Valenzuela in the wings.
Yeah, there we go. We just bringing the whole crew up here.
Absolutely.
And that's what I love when Bill leaves town and says, Dan, you know, go to your people and bring them on up. And so we do, because we have an awful lot going on. First thing we should do, I guess, is congratulate you on the primary election. The way this complicated state formula works, we have elected three people to the council who do not have to go into the general election.
Correct, because we're nonpartisan.
Right.
So we show up on everybody's ballot
exactly.
In the primary. And if you get this, it's a very complicated formula. But if you get over that complicated formula from a minimum, then you're automatically through. So as you know, we had our two incumbents, myself and Debbie Morales, and then a new council member, Chelsea Hundell. And we had other great candidates, and I was just grateful that we actually had people willing to step up in kind of this divisive world we live in and willing to serve. Because you know it's about the money.
Oh, absolutely. You've been on the council since 2013. You've been mayor for coming up on 10 years.
10 years, yes.
Yeah, and we should note that the voters in Sarita do not elect a mayor. You do that yourself among the council.
Yes. So by extension, they do, because they have to be on the council to become the mayor, but they don't get to pick the mayor.
We don't get to actually pick the mayor. This is interesting, because I'm down in Nogales now doing the newspaper down there, and they do elect a mayor.
Yes.
And so it's interesting as you look at the two different systems, because you had three people running for mayor down there. It's still not decided. It has to go to a runoff. And then you have the council. But in the mayor's race, two of them will not be serving.
Yes.
And that's interesting. So you kind of have to go for the whole enchilada. And if you don't get it, you're out. Whereas in our situation, you're on the council still, even if you're not the mayor.
Right. And when we looked at it, before I was the mayor years ago, you know, the previous mayor, Dwayne Bloomberg, did a white paper. And the council really, you know, studied it. And they said, from the collegialness of it, because if I go too far astray, they can't take me off the council, but they can certainly remove me as mayor.
Sure.
And I hope for good reasons that, you know, I've shown enough working relationship with my colleagues that they've, you know, wanted to keep me as mayor. But we won't decide that until after the general election, because officially everybody is serving through November. So it'll be probably December or January when the mayor and the vice mayor is decided.
Excellent. Lot going on down there.
A lot going on.
And I'm going to mention your two favorite topics, data centers and mining, and we're going to try to get through these here. I've had a lot of people come into us and talk about the data centers. There's a lot of consternation down there. A year ago, a developer asked whether land he owns was zoned to include a data center.
Yes, because it was already zoned park industrial.
Correct.
And the long list of things that qualified for it back in 1996, when it was zoned park industrial, which happens to be next to a landfill, which I'm assuming the council at the time thought that might be a good use for park industrial next to a landfill and across from mine tailings. And so that's contained within their specific plan. So they did a letter of interpretation. Our professional staff looked at all of the things that were already qualifying as park industrial and felt that a data center fell into that same category.
Right, because obviously they weren't around 30 years ago.
Correct.
So what we have here now are, there's a community, there has been a community meeting. I know there's another one planned. There's been a lot of people that call to the public at the council meetings. A lot of them are not happy. A lot of them are dealing with information that maybe doesn't translate to what might happen here. And again, we should note there is not a proposed data center.
Nothing has been submitted to the town of Sahuarita.
So everyone's driving off the fact that a year ago, somebody was given a thumbs up that if they wanted to bring a data center here, it could go on that piece
right.
of land.
And it would almost be, I was talking to somebody the other day, the equivalent, because we also have lots of land that's a zone for commercial, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I could go out there and say, well, I think we're going to get a Costco, a Home Depot, and a Lowe's all on that property because it's zoned for all of those things, right? But that would be inaccurate because nothing has been submitted. So it was just in a... question to see if something could be that would fall into that category.
Right.
And, you know, when we went through our general plan, that was a little bit of a difficult. I was very, very pleased that passed 60-40, by the way, thank
right.
you to the residents. But they were putting out misinformation that if you pass the general plan, you're approving a data center, or if it failed, it would prevent a data center.
Correct.
And both of those were false because
absolutely.
It's based on previous zoning that was, again, given in 1996.
Well, this kind of goes along with the little bit of knowledge thing that we talk about on occasion where, you know a little bit of the law and you think you're a lawyer. You know a little bit of how things work at the town and you think that you can stop a data center by stopping the general plan.
Right.
And, simply not right.
And I think the irony of it is that a lot of people are searching for all of this information using AI, which is using data centers, to come up with all this information. So, you know, if everybody that is doing this would give up all their social media and storing mm-hmm. all their pictures and all of the above.
Rely on newspapers again, folks.
There you go, back
honestly,
to paper.
You know, if we could just do that. However, the fact is what's driving a lot of them is that a year ago, a developer did inquire, and therefore the assumption is that he has had people approach him regarding data centers. So this is all speculation, but
right.
certainly sounds plausible. So I want to know from you, what are some of the questions that you would want answered before supporting a data center?
Right. And to me, I've always taken the position, you know, we're open for business. So from my perspective, being an elected official, it's not supporting or not supporting. It's going by state statute, our regulations, our codes, and those types of things. So what I think some people are missing in that letter of interpretation, it wasn't like a blanket, yes, don't worry about it. You know, they still have to go through the process. Part of the conditions of it was proving up the utilities being able to serve mm-hmm. it, setbacks, noise study, parking requirements. So all of the things that would be normally accomplished if anybody is coming into the town, those would still be required, just like the other 17 or so things that could have been already approved previously in 1996. This is just one more addition. But it's not, I'm just going to bring in whatever I want, it's going to go wherever I want, and nothing. And as you know, the developer in this case, in my opinion, is very community-minded and will take all of those things into account because the neighborhoods that have been built within about half the town, you know, he's also, I think, feels a high responsibility for. So as you had mentioned, nothing has been submitted. But, you know, and I don't mind how people vote. I just would hope they vote on facts and true facts. And there's a lot of not
right.
that going on, unfortunately.
I think, though, that if you had an open-looped, water-cooled system, this could use 1 million to 5 million gallons. I don't know, is it a day? That's what people are saying, is that this monstrous amount of water. These are just some of the things that are out there.
Right.
And so a closed-loop system,
yes.
which is probably what would be done, although, by the way, there is something in between an open and a closed-loop system. There's a hybrid out there. We know that. Water is really, to what I'm hearing, is the biggest concern. And then if you say, well, it's going to be a closed loop system, it's not going to use very much.
Right.
Then it's energy.
Correct. 100%.
So,
and I happen to have toured one up in the Phoenix area, which was closed loop. And they replace that water every 10 to 12 years because they have this aggressive filtration system that actually makes sure that it's purified. And
right.
So you're right. When I tell people that, well, then it takes more energy by not using water. But also, I've been to a couple of presentations where the CEO of Trico has said that this will be bifurcated. They're going to pay the top rate 24/7, which actually can help extend the next rate case because the high rate user 24/7, there's some benefit from the residential users from overhead and those types of things. But sometimes that resonates and people believe that, and other times it does not. But he has been very, both because there would also serve the one up in Marana that has been approved. And when he was testifying to the council, you know, he said the same thing up there, that they have a way that the use and the cost of it from delivery to the infrastructure to the ongoing cost, and he even said, you know, to the paper the bill is printed on, will not fall on the residential ratepayers.
But we still have a potentially high water use industry coming to the desert, and some people are having a tough time kind of making sense of that.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I understand that, but I think no matter where, and I know you've probably looked into it across the country, sometimes the utilities and such become a factor, but a lot of cases it's just not in my backyard. That, you know, if it's in another location that's not in the desert, people in Ohio or wherever it might be are still objecting to it because of some may be good information, but I would say a lot of it is based on different technologies, and all industries learn over time and try to do better. I know there was an example, I think it was in Chandler, that there was a humming that was pretty prolific. But then they found out they didn't use the right gaskets, you know, where they
right.
mounted the air conditioners to the metal roof.
Right.
So they replaced those, and then a lot of that went away. But they always, usually opponents of anything will find the worst case scenario that
right.
has happened somewhere in the world.
Yeah.
And by extension, 100% of the time, that's going to happen
yeah.
where we are.
Presented as the norm.
Yes.
And one of those. So we have been looking at different data centers across the country. One that caught my eye was out of Abilene, Texas, and it caught my eye because I actually did my summer newspaper internship there many years ago. It's 1,100 acres, 8 buildings, closed-loop system. They say that it'll use the equivalent, this is not a typo, folks, of the water that 4 families would use annually. And so they just keep spinning out
yes.
through there. Now, that would be just for cooling, not for the needs of the employees there that
right.
that we have. So, but electricity-wise, which of course they're generating their own, they also have, it's the Texas Plains and the wind blows, and that's what they have is this wind energy, and there's something
right.
there which we don't have.
Right.
And so a lot of these questions, even something like, it throws off a lot of heat.
Right.
Noise, lots of different concerns. So I get it when people are showing up to the meetings and saying, hey, because they don't want it to start going up without having a say and without knowing really what's going to happen there.
Right. And the difficult thing for council sometimes is explaining sort of how government operates, right? You know, zoning, and then this particular property is contained within a specific plan. So those are really tight guardrails from the council's perspective, from a town's perspective, because that's the rules of the road that not only the developer has to follow, but it's also what the rules of the road are that the town has to follow. I know you noticed that the city of Tucson just put out some regulations
sure.
associated with large scale data centers. And my opinion is the reason, because some people wanted them to ban them, but there's something called Prop 207, which prevents a municipality from a taking of sorts, right? So if it's zoned park industrial and the town says, well, I'm not going to now not let you do that, then you're involved in lawsuits, very expensive lawsuits, and you're going to make them whole at the end of the day. So for me as an example, if there was probably any municipality, if they could have banned data centers, it probably would have been the city of Tucson. And by a 6-1 vote, they did not. Now, part of the success of passing the general plan will allow our staff to work on amendments to our data center zoning codes, because it wasn't a topic years ago.
Correct.
And just having zoning and park industrial satisfied the needs of our community. So now that we don't have to spend another 2 years passing a general plan, which would have no effect on data centers, we are looking at the zoning requirements for data centers. So that's where a town, as the city did, can put in parameters on how far away it can be from a residential neighborhood, require a noise study, utilities, buffering, all of the things that you would normally do for any commercial project. That allows us now the time to actually do that. But that really is for future land holdings, not for land that's already established within a specific plan area.
But having attended or monitored many of the council meetings where these folks are coming forward to the call to the public, what I'm seeing is that, okay, maybe on the surface you can't stop this, but behind the scenes you can send a message that we're going to really make life tough on you if you decide to bring it here.
Right.
Everything from the bushes you want to put in to the, to the height of the buildings to everything, we're going to make it really tough on you. And I think that's really what a lot of them are saying is, are you willing to do that, or would you support an industry like this coming into the town?
Well, I think it's a combination of both, because if you're doing buffer and noise abatement and studies, you get to set a standard that would be reasonable. What you, I don't think, can do as a community or as a council is zone a project out of existence, because mm-hmm. then you get back into the Prop 207.
Right.
And then you really are going to get into lawsuits. And I know there's been stories that people have shared to me, kind of the adult book world, mm-hmm. world, that when towns have attempted to do that, because, you can say it can't be closer than 3,000 feet from a school and
right.
from churches and this and that, which basically outzones that type of project, then you end up in lawsuits. And when towns have attempted to do that, the courts have just said, well, you've overreached, so we're going to take all the guardrails off.
Okay.
And then they get to do. So that's the kind of balance that we have to consider when we're looking at amending our zoning codes.
Okay, very good. You are listening to the Buckmaster Show, and that is Mayor Tom Murphy from the town of Sahuarita. This is a great time to tell you right before the break about one of Tucson's favorite restaurants, and I know it's a favorite of Bill and Darlene, El Cisne, which in English means the swan. It's at the northeastern corner of Swan and Sunrise. At El Cisne, you're going to find multicultural fine dining representing several regions in Mexico. El Cisne is open every day for lunch and dinner. Dine in, take out. El Cisne also specializes in catering large or small events, and I know that Bill and Darlene have used that and been very happy with it. Let their friendly staff set up, serve, clean up, handle everything for your special occasion. El Cisne, northeastern corner of Swan and Sunrise, and you're listening to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolo Village Studio. Our live line is made possible by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Green Valley News and Sahuarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sahuarita Sun, covering your hometown.
The voter-approved Regional Transportation Authority Plan is investing in infrastructure improvements throughout our region, including better roads, expanded transit services, and bicycle and pedestrian enhancements across the region. Over the next 20 years, these investments will help our communities move more safely and efficiently. Stay informed and track project progress at rtamobility.com. That's rtamobility.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
Congratulations to KVOI 1030 The Voice radio host Bill Buckmaster on his nomination to the Tucson Weekly 2026 Best of Contest in the category of Best Local Radio Host. Votes must be submitted through TucsonWeekly.com. Limit one vote per category, per email address, per day. Voting ends at noon on August 24th, and once again, votes must be submitted at TucsonWeekly.com. Good luck, Bill!
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Shear, sitting in for a vacationing Bill Buckmaster. We're here with Tom Murphy. He's the mayor of Sahuarita. And we're joined in this second segment by Dr. Manny Valenzuela. He's the superintendent of the Sahuarita Unified School District. And when we cover events, I often see both of you there. We just had one. Mayor, Sahuarita's been framed.
Yes.
Framed. Tell us about this frame that is sitting on town property.
Absolutely.
And why?
Picture yourself in Sahuarita.
Get it?
It's my other version of it. So through the Pima Association of Governments and RTA, which you mentioned earlier, there's something called the TABI program, which is a youth art, transportation and youth art program. And we have been partnering with our school district for more years than I can.
20 years plus.
And it goes, if you're going throughout the community, it's everything from our trash cans to our benches. RTA project expanded Sahuarita Road, the underpass which connects both sides of the street, the internal artwork and both the entrances artwork, the tile artwork was with a partnership with the school district. Now we do have the ability to save up. This kind of really started out of COVID. We can save up to 3 years worth of money. And when we had our Sahuarita letters on Sahuarita Road, that was a multi-year project. And this one was 2 years worth of funding that we were able to put this frame because we had a lot of people on our Sahuarita Road, Sahuarita letters. They would take pictures in front of it, which was nice, except for a lot of times they're stepping into the middle of the road to do it. So this next one, as you mentioned, we built on town property with a accessible sidewalk to get to it and not in the middle of traffic. And, I don't know, it's probably 30 feet tall or so.
It's a frame.
Your whole family inside of it. And take a picture. And a lot of thought went into it, both from our public works department with John Garcia and our high school art instructor.
Right.
And if you're looking from one side of it, you see nature. So the pictures on the one side of the frame are nature driven. And then on the other side, it's to our community center. So it's about parks and rec and that type of theming. And the students all got to say a few words. And it was really heartwarming to hear how much it meant to them to put their stamp on it. And they all picked different parts of it, animals or cacti and things to do it. and the teacher, you know, had them volunteered them to to say something, and it was really interesting because a lot of the students, you know, embraced that public speaking, and a couple, you know, were a little shy,
right.
But everyone had an opportunity. It's just a great program, and we've been doing it for many years.
And Manny, they did a great job. I mean, my first thought was, oh, I wonder what Tucson artists they hired to come on down and do this. And I find out it's local kids, and they did a great job.
No, and you know what, Dan? I think it speaks to something I never take for granted, and that's the authentic spirit of trust and community that defines us. I mean, through all of our challenges and everything that we're faced with, there is a genuine commitment to trying to find where we have in common and how we can work together to do things better than if we try and go it alone. Right, Tom?
Right, absolutely. And that goes from everything from a traffic signal like out at Walden Grove or a turn arrow at Saurita High School. Our town manager, Shane Dilley, and Dr. Valenzuela, you know, if they come to an agreement, they do a handshake, and we move forward. And we're all serving the same residents. That's
right.
The thing that I reflect on all the time. Mm-hmm. It's not different parents that Dr. Valenzuela serves, and I serve a different set of parents.
Right.
It's all the same residents. And you know, we call it operating in the Saurita Winds way. And I think that has bode very well for us as a community.
Manny, how many students you have this year on day one?
You know what? I'm feeling pretty good, Dan. I think we've all heard about the headwinds facing public education, whether it's demographics, economic variables, or policy things like the ESA issue. But we're very conservative. I think we budgeted to be down, I think, 4 or 5%, actually. We're very conservative. Mm-hmm. And the indications are favorable. Actually, we're starting to see in some areas growth on a slight scale. I would predict that if we're down, we'll be down 2% or mm-hmm. less, which is really, and I'd like to believe that it has to do with, again, our community, local investment in making our schools the best that they can be. And I believe our public schools offer a unique learning experience historically that really prepares people well for citizenship in our country. So I'm as excited as ever, even after doing this for quite a long time. But I still love it, and I still believe very passionately in what we're doing, and I'm looking forward to a great year.
Well, if you remember about 9 months ago, the state was talking about, you know, the great resignation of mass resignation, really of teachers it was, and they had some numbers attached to that. I won't get into those. But there were concerns that it would reach into this academic year. How did you start the school year as far as staffing goes?
Actually, the pursuit of a high-quality, student-centered staff is relentless and never-ending. I will say that, as an indicator, in the 17 years that I've been superintendent, on average, we have maybe 80 new teachers.
Mm-hmm.
This year, the new teacher induction class was about 40.
Wow.
Which I think it speaks to a lot of things. I mean, obviously, these are pretty good jobs. We've worked to increase compensation, but also create an environment where people want to be, and it's steady, challenging, but steady employment, and longevity correlates to teacher effectiveness, student outcomes. So I'm excited, and I'm feeling relatively good about the staffing situation, although I never take my foot off the gas.
Okay, very good. We're going to go to the live line now. Matt Laus has a question for us. Hey, Matt, how are you?
Good. Hey, thanks for filling in for Bill. Hey, Manny, you know, we've had a couple visitors to KVOI recently. One was some people from JTED. And the other recently, just with Alan yesterday, was somebody who, it was Becky Palick, who did an article about the whole PEEPS issue with the county trying to figure out what to do. And in reading that and also listening to her yesterday, I gather, you know, this involves, you know, the question, what are we getting out of PEEPS? And the third grade readings participation or levels, would you agree that PEEPS somehow helps with that? Or, you know, could you talk about it a
sure,
little?
Sure. Right. No, Matt. Yeah, no, man, you're asking some great mm-hmm. and pretty loaded questions. I could go on all day and just have Tom drive back home without me. You know, really, as I think about my career, which is now beginning its 38th year, I can't help but ponder the fact that although the state of Arizona still currently only funds kindergarten at half, like half speed, half of the amount. The fact is, kindergarten has become kind of what first grade was in terms of knowledge, complexity, and academic readiness. And preschool, which was always kind of seen as something that was kind of optional for most, for more and more of our students, it's become essential. So the funding for the PEEPS program, I think we get about $300,000 for that to help support and offset the really expensive costs of early childhood, because there are so many regulations and requirements. And it allows us to provide access to more students to have high quality certified early childhood experiences that help get them ready for school. So in terms of the early childhood part. In terms of your inquiry about JTED, yes, it's my understanding that JTED is going out for a bond, which their board has called for. And, you know, career and tech ed is high-quality education. In Pima County, it's a partnership between the 14-member districts of the JTED and the JTED itself. And I like to call it raising the bar for all. It's an era where, regardless of whether you want a four-year degree, a PhD, or whether you want to get a highly skilled, highly technical credential and certification and go out into the workforce and contribute and serve in that way and earn a comparably very good living, the key is we need to raise the bar for every kid.
Very good. Thank you. That's Manny Valenzuela. He is the superintendent of the Sahuarita Unified School District. We are with him and with Sahuarita Mayor Tom Murphy. We're going to be right back on the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolo Village Studio.
For more than 30 years, the nonprofit Save the Scenic Santa Ritas has protected Tucson's water and rare Sky Island ecology from large-scale industrial mining in the Santa Rita Mountains south of Tucson. The Santa Rita Mountains include sacred Native American sites, a crucial Sonoran Desert watershed and habitat for endangered species including jaguars and ocelots. Learn more at scenicsantaritas.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Food insecurity is a huge challenge in our community. Please consider donating to the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona and Interfaith Community Services. And don't forget our animal friends, supported by the Southern Arizona Food Bank, which makes sure no one ever has to make a choice of feeding their pets or feeding their families. Let's make sure no one goes hungry in Southern Arizona.
And welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Shear, sitting in for Bill. We want to thank Mayor Tom Murphy again for being our guest, and also Dr. Manny Valenzuela. He's also in studio, superintendent of Sahuarita Unified School District. Mayor, another one of our favorite topics, mining.
Yes.
And I had somebody come to my office this week and shake their finger at me, and it should have been at you, and they said, that man supports mining. Do you support mining?
Well, when I moved here in 2003, I did recognize that we are the Copper State, and I've learned over time that copper is where copper is, unlike farming and maybe those types of things. And so the irony of this particular mine, it's not even located within the town of Sahuarita, and it's all on private property. I certainly am a big private property rights guy. And again, as I mentioned before, you know, we are, as a community, we're always open for business, so to speak. And, but this one has been interesting because all of the requirements, the permits, they're all at the state level. So when people come at me and say, you know, we should not allow mining, you know, I tell them, well, probably you need to talk to your state legislators because if you think the permitting requirements for air or water are too low, then you really have to work it through the state. ADEQ, we're not in charge of water permits. ADWR is. ADEQ is in charge of air. So if you have an issue with particulates or whatever it might be, but the truth is, at the end of the day, they're already permitted to draw 6,000 acre feet a year for the mine. We do have a little piece of property that has a right-of-way agreement for their water to deliver there. But because we did agree to that, we also got a commitment from Hudbay to recharge 105% of the water that they're drawing from the aquifer in the local area. Because as an active management area, they would be within their rights to recharge it anywhere in the active management area. And they've been banking about 8 years worth of water up in Marana. So, you know, and they could stop there because they are recharging, but their Project Renew's commitment is to bring that water back to the aquifer and recharge through that project. So, you know, if we do away with the right-of-way agreement, it really is the only document that has any teeth that requires them to recharge 105% of the water.
And they voluntarily agreed to that number. This is not a requirement or anything.
There is no requirement.
Right. So we're talking about an 8-mile pipeline that's going to bring water into our area that is currently not in our area.
Correct.
And I asked Hudbay, we're talking wet water, something that I can touch, I could jump into if I wanted to. And they said yes. And so there's 8 years of that coming on down the pipe. People think that if you stand in the way of the pipe, you pretty much stand in the way of the mine.
Correct.
Is that accurate?
No, okay. Because still, no matter what we would do on our right-of-way agreement, first, they already have the ability to pull 6,000 acre feet out of the ground.
Sure.
And for a organization that has probably already spent over $1 billion of the mine, this little segment of pipe that happens to be in our town, I can't imagine they're not going to figure out a different way to get that 6,000 acre feet up, including trucking it all up there, which I know people have been objectionable to the amount of truck traffic. Well, if that went away, one of their plans could be to truck it up there, and it would take away any of that requirement to recharge the water. Because right now the CAP terminus line is at Pima Mine Road, and so already they can bring it to Pima Mine Road, but Project Renews, which the last estimate I heard was about a $50 million project. And because we've done road improvements over the years, even before the mine started construction, they've taken advantage of that and I think have expended about $10 million putting sleeves under the roads. When we rebuilt the bridge on Pima Mine Road, they hung part of that pipe there. Both them and FICO, actually, two 36-inch water lines. So from my estimation, they are very committed to bring that water down. And I think, obviously, if they have the ability to pull it out of the aquifer, I would support everything to put it back in the aquifer.
So if Hudbay does not live up to its promise to recharge 105% of the groundwater that it's going to be pumping, what recourse does the town have?
Yeah, the main recourse would be voiding the right-of-way agreement, which typically with utilities is a standard agreement, whether it's Southwest Gas or, you know, if TEP or Trico was undergrounding lines. So the only really recourse we would have is to not allow that right-of-way agreement. But then again, I go back to the perspective that I can't imagine they don't have a B and a C and a D plan to bring water up to the mine, because it's, you know, imperative for the operations of it.
Dr. Valenzuela, I want to talk about historically in our area, because we have got mines that were there long before Sarita was truly developed and became incorporated in 1994,
right
on our doorstep. And they have, they've been a friend of the schools.
They've been a big friend of the schools. That's just an indisputable fact. You know, and we have, I would say, one of the nicest auditoriums in the region, for sure. It was built in the late 70s before equalization and the funding structure. So it was all local property taxes. And there's a big piece of copper right out front, because a significant part of that cost was borne by copper. Copper, when I came to Sahuarita 21 years ago, was probably paying about 40% of the local taxes. Mm-hmm. The number's gone down, you know, as we've, which is, I think, a good thing, as it's the area is diversified and expanded its tax base, but it still pays a significant amount. And one thing I appreciate is that the mining community in our region has intentionally chosen to be an engaged and active part of making the community the best that it can be through community investment, through community engagement, through participating in things like our Sahuarita Wins partnerships, and really sharing this belief that we really can do better, whether you're talking about money and economics or workforce or just quality of life, by working together. So the mining community has been a great partner to us as long as I've been there.
And I know from my perspective that they know there's a mine life attached to any mining project. And really their goal, at least that's been my feeling when it comes especially to Freeport, you know, they want to turn over a sustainable community once that mine life is extinguished. And that goes back to the partnerships that Dr. Valenzuela was talking about. From the town, you know, we've had our Shark Tank and we've repurposed our Biz Hub. There have been many, many opportunities to work with the town and the school district to make sure the town, once those projects are, you know, live out their mine life, that we're going to have a community. And I'm grateful for that, because if you drive through other communities through Arizona, that really there's no diversification. It's really a mining town, so to speak, right? And when that mine is finished, I often wonder how will those communities maintain their quality of life when they're really only one economic driver is gone. But we've worked really hard to diversify our economy and, you know, work through those relationships to, you know, have a great community.
And I want to acknowledge that a lot of people are opposed to mining. And since I've been here, which has been 17, almost 18 years, we've had Augusta Resource, we've had Hudbay, of course, Freeport, ASARCO, Grupo Mexico, those groups all here. And as we develop a new mine, you know, trucks on the road, water, dust, other environmental concerns, lots of things crop up. And as we have to wade through these, it's just part of the process.
Yes. Yes. And as a town, you know, that's what we're committed to have to do is, but there is a process in place that protects everybody, including the user, right? That is actually coming into the town. So, you know, as a council, we don't willy-nilly get to ignore, again, you know, mining laws, state statute, you know, zoning codes, and those types of things. We have to allow everybody to go through the process. And just because somebody, a particular resident or group of residents, objects to something, I don't get to overrule all of those things and just, you know, be king for the day, so to speak.
And the Copper World, which is east of us, is fully permitted.
Yes.
And it's going to move forward. We'll have to see exactly what that looks at like. But ultimately, what's in it for Sahuarita, other than what Dr. Valenzuela has already mentioned, in that they are tend to be community-oriented.
Right, and I think, you know, with conversations I've had with them, the fund that Freeport has, I know we've had, you know, early conversations that they would like to do something similar to that, but also being that we're sort of the hub, with you have the U of A, San Javier Underground Mine Schooling. It's in the zip code of Sahuarita, so I claim it as part of Sahuarita. But we also have these other three mines. So the offshoots, and then you have Komatsu, and you have Caterpillar Proving Grounds. So the most of these mines subcontract everything, so to speak. Between workers, both under construction, also on a permanent basis, other spinoff companies that support the mining community, we hope that we can take advantage of that and continue to diversify our economy.
Manny Valenzuela, I was bummed out earlier this year when I heard that Desi Ralston and Shelley Lazzardi were going to be retiring as principals in our district. And then we sent a reporter over to talk to their replacements, Brian Huey and Chris Jackson. And I got to tell you, I was so encouraged. These two guys are just super excited about being in there and being with these kids. And man, it's awesome.
You know, Dan, one of the things I've learned over the years is the true value of leadership and the impact that a school principal can make on a school. And so when you lose a principal, it's, as you would call it, a bummer.
Yes.
But you know, at the end of the day, minds and us, we have our time. And both of these gentlemen are coming to us with decades of experience,
right.
Multifaceted, but yet despite the experience, just the fire in their heart and the commitment to the mission and the work and the power of public education to change lives and to do what public ed has always done, which is provide for individual opportunity to make our economy better and to prepare good citizens.
Right. Well, you know, sometimes when you put people in these positions, you have a sense that they're just looking at that next thing already. And that's not the case right here. I can tell that these two are going to dig into these schools and just build on the very strong foundation that already existed.
No, these gentlemen both have a history of service and of being in it for the impact of the work that we do.
Okay.
And when both of those schools coincidentally were named, again, it goes back to knowing where we are. One is called Copper View, and one is called Wrightson Ridge. So
keep hammering away, Mayor. Just keep hammering away. Okay, we only have about a minute left here, but Manny, I'm going to throw this last question at you. As a recent poll that I read said that what teachers want most is two things: support from the administrative leadership and better pay. Are you finding this to be about right?
That's a whole lecture in itself again. But I'll just
you got 1 minute.
I'll just cut to the chase. Really, there was a recent Arizona study. It's called Why I Stay, about teachers, because this is important. Basically said that the most important things are safety and support. And to me, we've taken that to heart. Safety, not just tactically, which we have a great rapport with our law enforcement partners, or physically in terms of the bullet-resistant glass or the cameras, but really it's about building community and taking care of our teachers, investing in their development, investing in the kids, and taking care of their total well-being so that teachers can teach and kids can learn and we can honor that mission. So I think we're committed. In the other stuff, it matters. And through the support of our community and the local investment of our community, along with the funding that we get from other sources, we've been able to give raises, I think, 15 out of the 17 years that I've been superintendent. And I'm real hopeful that together we'll resourcefully be able to continue making our public schools the best that they can be and continue to honor the mission that's charged to us.
Very good. Well, I wanted to thank the Sawadita crew today. Thank you, Dr. Manny Valenzuela, SUSD superintendent. Mayor Tom Murphy for valuable insight. Always a pleasure to have both of you on.
Thanks for having us.
Next time Bill goes on vacation, we hope to join you again.
We'll be back.
Okay, and we're going to be right back with Weekend Watch to help you plan your weekend. Don't forget, our live line is made possible by the pros over at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Back in a minute.
The new Regional Transportation Authority Plan is delivering long-term upgrades to transportation infrastructure across our region. Everything from roadway improvements to expanded transit and new bicycle and pedestrian connections. These projects are designed to keep you moving, connected, and support our community. Visit rtamobility.com for updates on what's happening near you. That's rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
At Tucson International Airport, we make it easy to fly from the moment you arrive.
Hop in. We'll get you from parking to the terminal in no time.
We keep our lines short so you can get to your gate quickly.
Why deal with the big city airport when you can relax with our dining options before your trip?
We'll get you off the gate and into the air fast.
At TUS, we make it easy. Visit flytucson.com. Now with nonstop flights to Portland, Las Vegas, and Salt Lake City.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Travel is my lifelong passion, visiting more than 100 countries, all 50 states, and flying on nearly 75 different airlines. I'm ready to talk travel anytime, anywhere. That's why I'm excited about our new monthly Travel Talk podcast, hosted by Bon Voyage Travel President Ryan Hansen. Check out the latest travel trends on Travel Talk at bvtravel.com.
And welcome back. It's time for Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Start planning now for your enchanting getaway in the land of enchantment. Silver City and Grant County are an easy 3-hour drive east of Tucson. There's a lot to do there, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and hanging out in historic Silver City. Find out more at visitsilvercity.org. And we are here with 101.7 The Drive's Ken Carr. How are you, Ken?
How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, I'm driving a lot down to Nogales, and it is the most beautiful drive that one can imagine.
Even in this heat?
Oh, you know what? You don't get out and run next to the car. You stay inside where there's air conditioning.
Well, I was going to say, are you one of those people that blasts the air conditioning, or do you roll down all the windows and let the hot air blow through your hair?
I'm in between.
All right.
So, hey, there's a lot going on, even though it's hot out there, and we're heading to August, which means just, what, 3 more months of summer?
Well, we're in that time of year where it's still, there's a little less events outside than what we'll get probably starting in about another 30 days or so when
sure.
The temperatures start coming down just a little bit.
Yeah, what's a little bit? Like from 105 to 103?
Hey, you know what? Every degree counts.
I'll do it. Okay, right, tell us
so,
what's up.
Gonna start it with the Cat Video Fest. Do you have a cat in your home?
No, but I wish my wife will not let me. Let's publicly shame her
all right,
and bully her.
And it would be the most perfect pet for you. Well, the Cat Video Fest is an annual thing they do at the Loft. And it benefits Hermitage No-Kill Cat Shelter, Friends of PAC, and also the Humane Society. And what they put together is almost 2 hours of perfectly hilarious collection. I blew the line.
Because you were too worried about getting the purring part,
but we'll
right?
edit that out later. A perfectly hilarious collection of kooky kitty videos. And again, that fundraiser. And that starts tomorrow afternoon at 2. So it's an afternoon event.
Cats are awesome.
You know, I wish it would happen right meow, but we have to wait till tomorrow. Old Tucson night markets. The night markets have been wildly popular over the last few years. People like going out and doing local shopping kind of in one spot and with all the vendors and et cetera. It's a bunch of really, you know, cute little small businesses that do this. And the next one is coming up at Old Tucson tomorrow night, 6:30 to 10. At Old Tucson out on Kenny Road, 35 local vendors, actually a little more than that now, showcasing food and arts and crafts, plus they'll have rides, and it's free parking and admission. So nice thing to do with the family is go out and do that.
So you're telling me that the county has found out what to do with Old Tucson.
Well, you know what?
At least for a night.
If you'd like to decide, for $1.5 million, you can purchase it yourself. America's Best Mexican Food Festival, that is tomorrow night starting at 5 with the VIPs, and then everybody else gets in at 6. Westin La Paloma Resort and Spa. And it's more than 30 of the Southwest's best chefs and culinary partners showcasing the depth and beauty of Mexican cuisine. The joke I've been making on the drive is that they're going to offer Ken Sadillas and Ken Chiladas. Whether that's actually part of the menu, you'll have to go find out for yourself.
Please tell me that's not the last word. You must have more.
Oh, that Mexican food. On I can go. A couple other things. Summer Safari Nights, the last one of the summer, is coming up tomorrow night at Reed Park Zoo. That's at 6 o'clock, where you can enjoy the zoo in the cooler evening hours, keeper chats, animal encounters, artifact stations, carousel rides, crafts and games, live music, and also a little future event real quick, Tucson Comic-Con. A lot of people are talking about this because the celebrity guests this year are pretty good. Captain Kirk is beaming in from Starship Enterprise. William Shatner.
Wow.
And also the original Incredible Hulk, Lou Ferrigno, is going to be there as well.
And I remember watching the Hulk as a kid.
So do It was great.
But we had a black and white TV. When he turned green, we didn't know it. Okay, thank you, Ken Carr, 101.7 The Drive. Want to remind you that the Buckmaster Show is produced by Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is responsible for its content. On behalf of Bill's longtime executive assistant, Rosemary Brandt, who is awesome, and the entire team at Bustos Media Tucson, including engineering producer Brendan Kraft behind the glass today, have a wonderful and safe weekend.
KVOI Cortero, Tucson's only live local news and talk. A Bustos Media Station, 1030 The Voice. Online at KVOI.com. USA Radio.